Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
Well, last week on Open House, we talked about the plight of children, the children of asylum seekers being held in offshore detention on Manus Nauru. A couple of callers rang to say that while they were sympathetic to the situation of those children, they felt that the parents, in trying to enter Australia by boat, were essentially queue jumping, and they had the money to pay people smugglers so they could have stayed in the countries where they came from or those that they travelled through, like Indonesia. And it's a very complicated argument. Of course, the other argument is that Australia, by having a hard line on these particular asylum seekers, those who come by boat, has been able to virtually stop the people smuggling industry. And that may be a good, which may also, though, in my opinion, come at the expense of a wrong being done to others. Other callers talked about many refugees, 1,200 of them, who have drowned trying to enter Australia illegally, and the thought that if those people, those people shouldn't be forgotten. Well, human rights lawyer Julian Burnside said during the week that Australia treats asylum seekers worse than any other Western country. And during the week, one of our callers last week said, but Australia has a great record in refugee resettlement. To talk about that apparent paradox and the whole issue of the asylum seekers in Australia, indeed, as it's Refugee Week starting this week, we've been joined by Julian Burnside QC, one of Australia's prominent human rights lawyers. Mr. Burnside, welcome to Open House.
Thank you very much.
Well, you've said this week that Australia is the worst in the West for asylum seekers, and yet we know that Australia is actually the best in the world, isn't it, for offshore resettlement programs?
That's true, but only in a limited sense. Very few countries in the world have offshore resettlement programs for refugees. That is to say, programs where you go to other countries, handpick some refugees, and bring them into your own country. And it's our offshore resettlement system is very good, and we ought to be proud of it. But it only takes 13,750 people a year. Now, although that makes us the most generous per capita, it's still a very, very small number of people. And I think the real problem with Australia is the way we treat boat people, who by definition are not part of the offshore resettlement system because they haven't been invited to come here. They just turn up.
And just to be clear, asylum seekers, therefore, are not part of that.
Well, asylum seekers are people who arrive asking for protection, seeking asylum.
By any means.
So, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Whereas the people who we bring in the offshore resettlement scheme have, by definition, been assessed as refugees in whatever refugee camp they're living. But I should say that there's a very interesting story which John Menadue tells against himself, because he was head of the Immigration Department, I think, in the Malcolm Fraser years, and he went to a refugee camp, I think, in Africa, and said to the person in charge of the camp, "Have you got any doctors or engineers?" And the manager of the camp looked at him ruefully and said, "I'm afraid we've only got widows and orphans."
Oh, wow. Well, that's a great place to take as our departure point for something that you said in this article you wrote this week. You're criticising those in the cabinet, particularly who are Christians, and while you're not a practising Christian, although you went to a Christian school, as I understand it, you're calling them out for not acting in a Christian manner.
Well, that's because my recollection of Christian teaching from my schooling, and I took it fairly seriously when I was at school, is that the golden rule is really central to it, and the teaching of Jesus really does say that you have to treat every human being properly, you know, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you, and so on. Now, I cannot for a moment imagine that the so-called Christians in our government would wish to be treated the way they are treating asylum seekers who try to reach safety in Australia. You know, if they would like to be treated the way they're treating boat people, then they're some kind of weird sadomasochists.
And the Bible also does say quite clearly we have an obligation to look after widows and orphans in their distress. Now, the question will be for many people, including someone who rang with a very considered viewpoint to this program last week, is that by getting on a boat, they've not only queue-jumped, but they're in a position that not everybody is in, and therefore, having jumped the queue, they're not entitled to line up for asylum, as it were. Can you help to unscramble that egg?
Okay, first of all, there isn't a queue, so it would be useful to know if people say they're queue jumpers, let's let them identify where the queue is. But I don't think anyone who knows about this area believes that there is a queue anywhere. And the second thing is this. Asylum seekers who arrive by boat are in a very special position because they fall at our feet and we have a choice. We can either treat them decently or we can kick them in the head and tell them to go away. Now, which is better? Which is closer to decent behaviour? I was about to say which is closer to Christian teaching, but I think decent behaviour captures it well enough.
Christian teaching is decent behaviour. they depend on each other. Because, yeah, I mean, you're right, absolutely.
Yeah. Well,
that's the standard we hold ourselves to.
What we're doing, I mean, and my real concern, to be quite honest, my real concern in right now in 2018 is that the way we have treated boat people since 2001 is gradually, little by little, redefining what we are as a nation, because we judge people by what they do and we judge nations by what they do. Now, what we are doing shows us in a light which is very different from the way we would like to see ourselves. You know, we regard ourselves as a decent nation that respects human rights. We regard ourselves as a nation that, you know, cherishes the ideals of a fair go for everyone. Well, I don't think there's anything fair about mistreating people who are desperate to reach safety.
Why do you think we've singled these particular people out?
I think it's a coincidence of events. The Tampa episode was John Howard's conspicuous attempt to mistreat people seeking asylum by saying you cannot come here, even though you've just been rescued from the ocean. And that went to the federal court. The federal court's trial judgment was handed down at 2:15 in the afternoon, Melbourne time, on the 11th of September 2001. And about 8 or 9 hours later, the attack on America happened. Now, it was then that John Howard started calling boat people illegal. And since it was notoriously the case that most boat people were fleeing extremism in Muslim countries, it was a fair bet that most, but not all of them, were Muslim. And so all of a sudden, we need to be protected from these quote-unquote illegals. The truth is, they haven't broken any law, and we don't need to be protected from them. And unfortunately, the rhetoric really carried the day because of the extraordinary atmosphere in Australia after September 11.
So, as a human rights lawyer, does it nullify their claim for asylum if they got on a boat to come here? Because that's the other argument. Quite clearly, there was a strong anti-Islamic sentiment. There was an Australia turning in on itself, which happened across the Western world during that period. But now the argument is more about preventing people smuggling. But under law, do they nullify any of their rights by getting on a boat to come here?
No, they don't. No, they absolutely do not.
Does it have any validity at all that this has actually been effective because it did stop people smuggling?
People smuggling is a demand-driven trade. You know, there's only room for people smugglers when people are desperate to get to another place.
Yes.
Now, I think I understand the argument, as you've put it, but I would say, first of all, the fact that a person is prepared to risk life and limb in order to get to safety shouldn't disqualify them from being treated properly and being allowed into a safe place. Second, we have an interesting demographic problem facing us in Australia. In the next few years, the number of people in Australia older than 45 will exceed the number of people in Australia under 45.
Yes.
We're an ageing population. Everyone knows that.
Yes.
But most of the boat people who've come to Australia are under 45. They're eager to work, and they've had the courage and the initiative to do whatever they had to do in order to reach safety. Now, that strikes me as being exactly the sort of people we want here. You know, I mean, if we have to reduce this to selfish arguments, yeah. It's not too difficult to devise selfish arguments that make decent treatment sensible.
No,
there's another. There's
as unsatisfying as the selfish arguments. Oh, yes, go on, sorry.
I was going to say there's another interesting test of what we're doing. If people who are old enough to have a recollection of these things, if people would just imagine, just how would it look if what we were doing right now to boat people, if all of those boat people were Jews fleeing Germany in the late 1930s? You know, it looks absolutely disgraceful. And I think it is disgraceful even though they aren't Jews, it's not the late 1930s, but they are people fleeing terrorism and extremism of other sorts. And the irony is, my take on this is that Islamophobia is the new anti-Semitism, and it looks as though we are falling into line with Islamophobia, with exactly the sort of thinking that caused Jews to flee Germany in the late 1930s.
Well, yes, and maybe to continue the parallel, but I hope not unfairly, the fact that we never get to hear the stories of these people because the channel of communication has been so cleverly contained. The press are simply not as free. We in the media are not as free to tell their stories because we don't get access. Access has been controlled.
I agree with that.
And I just wonder if it wouldn't take telling their stories, if their stories were told more often, do you think average Australians would be more concerned?
I think they would, and it's commonly the case that people who actually meet a refugee and hear what they've gone through change their mind about how they ought to be treated. But there's a little more than this. You know, there's a very subtle argument which the government and to some extent the opposition run,
yes.
And that is that we have to be tough on boat people because we're worried about people drowning. Now,
yes.
To say that you're worried about a person drowning seems absolutely incontrovertibly a good argument. It seemed like a good thing to worry about someone perishing in their attempt to reach safety. But the difficulty with that is that if they were genuinely worried about people drowning, they probably wouldn't punish the ones who don't drown. But that's precisely what we do. And we are now doing it explicitly. We're saying we have to send them offshore in order to deter other people from trying to come here. And that's punishment with a purpose. I really think that it's just a fig leaf to cover indecent behaviour. And what worries me about Australia at the moment is that the things that we are now doing to boat people would have been unthinkable 20 years ago. Would have been truly unthinkable.
Hmm. Yes, indeed, and worth considering this Refugee Week. What's the action that you think people should take?
Well, it depends on which people. I guess anyone who shares my view about what we're doing to refugees, they should perhaps take the opportunity, if ever they meet people who disagree with them, first of all, don't be impolite to those people because those people have probably been misled by the dishonesty of our politicians and the compliance of a large part of the press. And I'm talking about News Limited, of course, because they retail the government's line. So, shouldn't be critical of people who think that boat people are illegal or that they're queue jumpers or that we should be nasty to them, because that's the way we have been trained. So, allowing that we have to be respectful of people who disagree, try and introduce them to some of the facts. Deal with their objections rationally. I actually envy those amongst your audience who have the opportunity of speaking to people who disagree with them, because whilst I've been speaking out about this issue now for quite a while,
yes.
I have trouble ever finding anyone coming along to listen to me who doesn't already agree with me.
That's interesting.
In the first year or so, yes. People used to come along because I was kind of a novelty act, I suppose, you know, a sort of commercial silk who was attacking the government.
Yeah.
And it's like a dog walking on its hind legs, you know, you sort of, it's kind of interesting to watch.
Yeah.
Since really about 2003, I have noticed that people who come along to hear me talk typically agree with me already. So it's very hard. I don't need to persuade them of anything. I just need to sort of encourage them a bit more. But another thing people can do is this. I think our politicians would probably change their view about what's going on if they thought that the public at large were against it.
I'm certain
of it. I reckon what people can do very usefully is to write to parliamentarians,
yes.
Federal parliamentarians, and challenge them with simple questions. And there's a couple of tricks about this. First of all, the letters should be brief, and second of all, they should be actual letters, not emails. You know, handwritten or typed and signed, envelope, stamp, all of that. I would advocate writing very brief letters. For example, the classic would be, "Dear X, I'm a voter in your electorate. Do you think asylum seekers are, quote-unquote, illegal?
Right.
If yes, what offence do they commit? Yours faithfully."
Yes, now, very good.
That leaves them nowhere to hide. Now,
yes,
a number
good.
Of people have been writing a letter along those lines at my suggestion, and they get back 3 pages of scrawl written by a staffer which
yes.
doesn't address the question.
Correct.
Now, on my website somewhere, I've got about a dozen questions that people could ask in letters like that. Now, all of this leads to the related point that I was getting to, which is people who want to make a difference can form groups that meet socially once a week, for example, and the idea will be for them to sit down and write letters like that to federal parliamentarians. You know, turn a social occasion into something where they're making little steps towards changing the system. A lot of people are worried because they think that, you know, little actions like that don't make enough of a difference. I've been involved in this film called Border Politics, has a sort of unscripted David Attenborough character in it.
Yes.
And one of the places that the filmmakers took me to was Lesbos, which is just 4 or 5 kilometres off the coast of Turkey. So it's a common, it's a jumping off point for people coming across into Europe. Now, I heard a story when I was on Lesbos, which I suspect is a global story, but in any event, it was localised to Lesbos. The main town in Lesbos is a little place called Mytilene. And the story I heard was that there's a beach on Lesbos which every now and then, when the tide is high, lots and lots of starfish get washed up onto the beach.
Oh, yes.
And depending on the state of the wind, when the tide is receding, the starfish sometimes get stranded, and if they stay there during the day, they dry out in the sun and die. And a little girl who lived in Mytilene was very distressed by this. And she went down to the beach, and a grown-up told her very sensibly, "You know, you can't save all of them." And her response was to bend down, pick one up, throw it into the ocean, and she said, "Well, I've saved that one."
That's a beautiful story and a wonderful illustration of Australia's dilemma at the moment. It's been very good of you to give us some of your time for this Refugee Week. Julian Burnside, thank you.
Thank you.
He's a commercial litigator, Julian Burnside, a QC, and also an Order of Australia, AO. And he is nevertheless one of the world's great human rights advocates and a man who pricks the conscience of Australians, Julian Burnside. Very good speaking with him. You can go to his website, just Google him, Julian Burnside, for some of those resources that he talked about. If you'd like to be the sort of person who does write to your local member, and I think you ought, one way or the other, you know, whatever you, when if you want your democracy to work for you, you've got to kind of got to take it out for a run every now and then, write to your local member. But I can tell you that the personalised letters, even the short ones or the emails, the ones that show that you've actually applied a little bit of energy to it yourself, you haven't just sent in a long screed that someone, you know, photocopied for you. Those are the ones that really cut through. And you're having sat in party room meetings and I know that local members will stand up when there's a controversial issue on. They will say during a party room meeting where, you know, you can be more frank than the Westminster system allows you to be in the Parliament or outside because of the strong party whip that we have around our democracy here in Australia at the moment. In a party room meeting, people will stand up and say, I'm getting a lot of flack on this issue in my electorate. But they won't say that if they're not getting any flack. And it doesn't have to be flack and it doesn't have to be nasty. In fact, it's far better if it's not nasty. It's far better if you write and say, I'm really concerned about the kids on Nauru. Please tell me why they're still there. You know, things like that. That's Julian Burnside.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.